Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an inside and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 105, that's 105, is being brought to you once again by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, did you have a conversation with Jen James this past week?
I did not necessarily have the conversation, but it crossed my mind three or four times about our new jingle that we are going
to
talk
about. I'm super excited
to
have her develop a new jingle so I do not have to have this like 42-second intro every time.
42 seconds is killing you, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's tough. I mean, I try to put a little inflection here and there.
Nobody knows how many takes it takes you. Like, guys, we've been doing this. We've been here for an hour. We've just been trying to record the first 42 seconds.
Yeah. I would say the first, 10 podcasts, we would have a few edits. Maybe the first 20.
It's probably because you had to, edit out the cuss words.
We would have a few edits and we would be like, okay, and I would mark it down, but... we're live and we are recording it live. It's being pushed out tomorrow. Today's Sunday.
What does it technically mean to be live?
We've talked about
how
this.
Is it recording?
Like,
live?
How's it not live? It's live recorded. Yes, recorded live. But yet it's pushed out weeks later.
I don't know.
So yeah, I don't know. But anyway, it is Sunday, April 11th, I believe.
It is.
And the Masters are just now getting going in Augusta. It is 1:52 by my watch. And so I think they started the telecast maybe at 1 p.m.
Do you have a special Masters outfit?
No. And so guys don't wear outfits. Girls do.
What? Yes, they do.
No.
Oh, my gravy.
No.
Guys definitely wear outfits.
No.
I just saw it on Facebook this morning that there were at least two people that have their children dressed in their Masters outfits.
Garb.
They call them outfits.
Wow.
It's like they went and they bought special pink spring plaid.
So around
in Argyle
here,
for the Masters so they could watch it on TV. Yeah, I don't
are
know.
Are these females that they're posting this?
Females,
yeah.
But their
yeah,
kids are boys.
Yeah. Again,
their kids are boys.
Point made. So the Masters is a very hard event to get into. I had tickets to go see a Thursday round, which is round one, maybe 15 years ago, and it got rained out. And that's the closest I've ever come to going to the Masters. But very, very difficult. We see people all the time in this area that will have a Masters cap or a jacket, rain jacket, something logoed, a golf shirt. And they are so proud to wear that, and they actually should be.
Because it means that they were there physically?
They were there. That's the only place you can get those outfits.
Isn't that funny? So that used to be the thing with concert t-shirts, right? So it's like, I have this vintage 1994 concert t-shirt from NSYNC. But you can buy the same t-shirt.
Now you can, yeah.
Online now. Yeah.
But my understanding, and to be honest, I haven't tried it, but all this Masters... quote-unquote outfits.
Logoed materials.
Yeah. You only get it there.
That's interesting. See, that makes it special.
Yeah.
I think maybe we should do something like that. Maybe you should get a special logoed, maybe we could do pins. Do you remember pins that used to be real popular?
Like a few years ago even, yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking about the little square
the
pins.
Disney thing, yeah. We could do pins and every time you come in for your pet, you can get this new pin and you only get it here.
That's a grand idea.
For specific things.
Yeah. Cool. So, do you have a favorite golfer?
I don't have any golfers. I don't even know any of their
names.
The
answer would have been Lance is your favorite golfer because that's probably the only golfer you know.
I don't really call that golf.
Okay. Wow. So who do you think's gonna win today?
Do you ever play digital golf games?
No.
I used to play golf on the PlayStation. I used to whoop Lance's butt on it. But we play. It's a game called Game Pigeon on our phones, and golf is one of those, and I stink at it so bad.
So Game Pigeon is a multi-game
platform. So there's darts. I guess it's on iPhone specifically, I don't know, but it texts back and forth whenever you take a turn. So we play darts. I whoop him in darts. We play
pool.
I whoop him. Okay. We play pool. It depends on like if I get like the extra help and the guidance, if I can win on pool or not.
What does that mean?
So like the little, like if you hit the ball, it shows you the trajectory of the ball.
Oh, on like they the have little...
basic one. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the upper skilled ones, they don't have that. Anyways, golf is a game. It's kind of like putt-putt. It's digital putt-putt. And I don't like putt-putt anyways. But anyways, Lance is so much better at this golf game than I am. It takes me like 22 shots.
Okay,
so
who's your pick to win? Okay, sorry to cut you off. I'm going to cut you off.
22 shots on this one putt-putt.
Who's going to win the Masters today?
Five par.
Prediction. Jordan Spieth, Justin Rose, or Hideki, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, from Japan.
Justin Rose.
You very well could be right.
Well, just a gut feeling.
Okay. All right. Go with the gut. Go yes. with the gut. So, all right. Last week we talked about healthy pet, happy life. We kind of talked about fleas and ticks, and I was going to move on. We discussed a little bit about both of those parasites. And you, as you always do, you wanted to start talking about it before we recorded the podcast. I said, let's just talk about it on the podcast.
Well, because we left a teaser last week that we were going to talk more about it. And
yeah, so
I think
we're
going to
talk about Lyme disease, but you had a question about fleas.
No, you stated last week that we were going to talk more about just that they are little buggers that make you itch, but flea allergy dermatitis and some other flea problems that you get when you have fleas.
So let's talk about that. What are the common problems that fleas cause, and are there any diseases that they transmit?
Yes.
And can you expound?
Well, so the first and probably most obvious issue with fleas is that they're a nuisance, right? And so I think we've talked about this before, but typically when people are actively seeing fleas on their pet, the little ones that crawl around, like the little black dots, that is typically only 5% of their population, the flea population.
Adults are 5% of the whole flea population, correct?
So the bigger problem is that by that point, they probably have an infestation, which means that they're living in your carpets, they're living in your upholsteries, they have eggs, you know, living in your fibers of your
eggs,
couch.
Eggs, larvae, the only stage you can't kill is the pupa stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think last week we talked about, we really strongly recommend Sentinel Spectrum, mainly because of the whole birth control for flea thing, right?
Correct, yep.
So you're killing 95% of that whole population that's out there, because that adult flea never lays that egg that becomes a larva, that becomes a cocoon pupa.
Yes.
So, and I mentioned last week that I was like 10 years out of vet school, if not longer, before I really understood that life cycle. So great product, Sentinel Spectrum. Manufactured by Merck Animal Health.
Yes.
And it is definitely a much, much preferred product that we recommend. We have one other heartworm prevention that we have as a backup, but I don't even think we talk about that anymore.
It's all about
Sentinel Spectrum.
Yeah, we don't really talk about any of the generic products that we have unless money comes into play. So back to the flea situation. So the most obvious is fleas being a nuisance, right? Because they bite your pet, they bite you, they make you itch. You see them, then you feel all grossed out because you've got bugs living in your house and your dog is laying in your bed and that kind of thing. You asked, what more? So on the human aspect of things, correct me if I'm wrong, but fleas actually can transmit Bartonella.
Correct.
Okay.
Used to be called Haemobartonella to cats specifically.
Yes.
So we talked about cat scratch fever, Haemobartonella, or not Haemo, about Bartonella species.
Mm-hmm.
That is via cat scratch. And so Haemobartonella in cats,
mm-hmm.
Haemobartonella felis, now I believe is called Bartonellosis. The disease of Bartonella in cats. And so, yes, fleas can transmit Bartonella to cats.
Okay. So are there any other human risks with fleas?
The biggest human risk to me is flea bite dermatitis. Because when I first moved to Georgia back in 1993,
mm-hmm.
moved into a rental apartment / condo. And when my wife and I walked in, we were attacked by fleas.
Oh my gosh.
And that's because Supposedly, the last people that were in that rental unit were there like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And so there were fleas in the carpet in the environment, and they were hungry for a blood meal, and they attacked us.
Wow.
So that's the biggest nuisance to people, other than the whole gross factor, seeing them on your pets. But I guess to kind of reiterate on animals, cats can be, I guess it is via the bite that they get Bartonella, used to be Hemobartonella.
Mm-hmm.
If a cat or a dog eats a flea, what tends to happen?
They could potentially ingest the flea and then get tapeworms.
Right.
So question, couldn't technically people do the same thing? Couldn't like a small child like have a dead flea underneath their fingernail and then like eat a booger and eat the flea inadvertently?
I don't think people are they're not the natural host. So,
okay.
No.
So yeah. How do people get tapeworm? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know how they get tapeworm.
Echinococcus is a tapeworm that people in third world countries get. And quite honestly, I don't know the mechanism there.
Okay. So but Bartonella, scratch fever is like the big one with fleas.
Yeah.
And is that from the bite of a flea that you get Bartonella as a human?
No, cat scratch fever. I don't fully understand. Again, they scratch the skin, they break the skin barrier, and it's somehow in their nail beds and their nails.
So it's truly from the scratch of a cat?
Yeah. And then your lymph nodes get big, and you feel horrible for a while, and then you get over it, typically.
Interesting. So definitely fleas, as I would suggest. I would hopefully that's a rare instance anyways, but the biggest nuisance or the biggest issue is being a nuisance and biting and causing issues with their saliva.
Flea bite dermatitis in people and in pets.
Okay.
Flea allergy dermatitis, huge problem.
In dogs. Specifically. Okay.
What is the pattern of hair loss in flea allergy dermatitis that we see at the clinic?
Well, typically it's over the tail.
Caudal dorsally.
Yeah.
Yep, over the rump, the lower back, and going down the sides. And they have seborrhea, right? That oily skin dermatitis going on. And we usually start at the base of the tail with our hand. We'll go against the hair, and we're looking for flea dirt or live fleas that scurry. So do you recall what causes the whole flea allergy dermatitis? What is the pet allergic to? Is it the flea bite?
It's the saliva, the enzymes in
the saliva of the flea.
Yeah.
So most people probably didn't realize that fleas actually salivated.
I wonder how big their salivary glands are.
I mean, I'm just thinking about this, right? Like, why do they have saliva? I guess to digest the blood that they take during a blood meal. But it is the saliva. I have no idea who figured that out.
Yeah, I don't know. There's still lots of ongoing studies with both fleas and ticks, right? So how to get rid of them and the diseases that they cause, yeah, right? So a lot of universities do still study them.
So it's not the bite of the flea. It's the saliva that, I guess, seeps into the wound during the bite that these dogs in particular are allergic to, and they get super, super itchy. And the treatment, the key to treatment is anti-inflammatories, but really it's flea control. So very, very most of the things that we deal with and we talk about, very deep subjects, and we just kind of touch the surface of them. But I think you also wanted to talk about Lyme disease in particular with ticks.
I do, for sure. So
what in the clinic, when we do a heartworm test, we actually do a 4DX heartworm test. What are the things that we are testing for in that 4DX test?
So for the first one is heartworm antigen. And
yep.
So that is obviously why we call it a heartworm test. But the 4DX, so for diagnosis, right? So heartworm test, and then there's Ehrlichia, canis, anaplasma, and Lyme disease.
Borrelia burgdorferi.
Yeah.
So
really fun if you can actually pronounce it.
Yeah. So a lot of our clients and other pet owners out there don't understand that, quote unquote, a heartworm test is not just a heartworm test, right?
Well, so part of that is our fault, right? Because we don't need to advertise it as
such. We just talk about, the 4DX heartworm test, and they have no idea what that means. But when you compare a $26 only heartworm test to a $52 4DX, there's a big difference. We're screening for tick-borne disease here in the practice and all of our practices every time we do a quote-unquote heartworm test.
Yep. And so I guess the biggest things that I want to talk about in Lyme disease as far as pets are concerned is that Lyme disease is a prevalent disease here in Georgia.
It has become more prevalent.
A lot of people feel like it's only in the mountainous regions, like maybe it's only up in the Blue Ridge Mountains and that kind of thing.
It started in the Northeast, and that's mainly in people. Lyme disease is it's not zoonotic. What's the word I'm looking for? People get it, pets get it. Pets don't transmit it or transfer it to people.
I don't know.
An enzootic, I think, is what I would call that disease. And you can double check me on that. But it has been a prevalent problem in the Northeast for people for over 30 years. We have seen pets in the upper Northeast that have tested positive and had clinical disease of Lyme disease, which is really, it's basic general maladies. Just they don't feel good. Maybe their joints are swollen. They may run a fever. And then typically the body at some point is going to take care of the disease and the immune system's going to kick in.
But even for that, right? So a very small percentage of dogs actually will have clinical symptoms of Lyme.
Yep.
Right? So they can be infected with it and they don't have clinical symptoms. Whereas like people, most of them, and I don't know the stats, but I do know that it's much more significant. So if people are infected with Lyme, then they pretty much almost always have clinical symptoms, whereas pets don't, dogs specifically.
Well, yeah. And people aren't screened for Lyme disease. That was the other aspect there, right?
Yeah,
you don't go in for an annual blood test to see if you have Lyme disease. So only if you're showing clinical signs.
On the, I guess, defense of that. So we're talking about Lyme disease, and the two biggest strategies, in my opinion, are to avoid ticks, right?
Yep.
Or vaccinate your pet.
Yep. So we have a vaccine.
Okay.
And then we can avoid ticks, or we can prevent and kill ticks before they attach and start taking a blood meal to transmit the disease. So I would say there's three strategies there for sure.
So as you said, Borrelia burgdorferi, it's a bacteria that's transmitted through the bite of a tick. It does even affect horses and cattle. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It is, the disease name comes from Old Lyme, Connecticut.
I didn't know that. No.
Yeah. So the disease comes from Old Lyme, Connecticut, where the disease was recognized in children in 1976. The biologist...
1976. It's that new.
Yeah.
Huh.
The biologist that discovered it in... it was named after the biologist who discovered it in 1982. Wilhelm Burgdorfer.
Yeah.
So
definitely didn't know that.
Yeah.
So
interesting facts, right?
So it's a bacteria. It's what we would call a higher bacteria, and we actually further classify these organisms as rickettsial organisms. So what? So we talked about E. canis, Ehrlichia canis.
Yes.
Borrelia how do you say it?
Burgdorferi.
Yeah, Lyme disease, and then Anaplasma. Which there are a couple of different anaplasma organisms that in particular dogs get. So, something we actually do see, not every day, fortunately, but it's prevalent in our area and we screen for it and we treat it when they get clinically sick, or if we screen the disease and they're positive, we try to figure out through advanced testing whether they really have it or not. So... What is our preferred product for fleas and ticks?
Well, I was going to go there. Our preferred product to help control and prevent fleas and ticks, or prevent the infestation of fleas and ticks, is NexGard. It's an isoxazoline, is that how you say it, product.
Yep.
There are other products on the market, but we definitely prefer NexGard. One of the reasons that, I mean, it's not a huge reason, but it actually is on the label that it kills ticks within 48 hours. And that's a really big or significant factor, because a lot of times it takes ticks to be attached longer than that in order to transmit disease. Yep. So I'm reading from an article here at Today's Veterinary Nurse, but it says that Borrelia burgdorferi transmission requires 24 to 52 hours of tick attachment. And the peak time for transmission is 48 to 52 hours. So that being said, if you're killing the fleas, or excuse me, the ticks, hopefully before they can transmit disease, that is key. So if you didn't vaccinate your dog and you obviously didn't avoid the tick, at least you're killing it before it can spread disease.
Yep.
So NexGard as a once a month oral product. Chewable
product, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so is where we should
NexGard and Sentinel Spectrum are the best recommendations we can make for every pet in the state of Georgia and really nationwide.
So if you're a pet owner and you find a tick on your dog this spring or summer, what do you do? Do you freak out and come to the vet and say, hey, there's a tick here, can we screen him for Lyme disease?
I think you seek veterinary care and you have to have a conversation. Like, what products is your pet on? Where have you been? Let's talk about what may happen. Let's talk about fixing the problem now.
Do all ticks carry Lyme?
No.
Okay, so certain species?
Certain species, and I don't even know how many species of ticks we commonly see. 4 to 6 comes to mind.
I think there's 6 that most of our products will prevent against.
Yep.
And then there's this new Gulf Coast tick that's kind of
Yeah, well, I mean, the Gulf Coast tick is not new, but I do think there's a new variant.
It's new to the product lines being covered on product lines.
I mean, I'm from Texas. Lone Star tick, we see Lone Star tick here. It's a very distinctive tick that has a white dot on the top of its lower back. We see brown dog ticks, we see American dog ticks, we see Ixodes, we see deer ticks. That's 5. There must be another 1 or 2 that we see. So, Gulf Coast, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
But
so how do you say Ixodes?
I say Ixodes.
Ixodes. Ixodes.
So fun
that
fact.
That is the black leg tick.
Black legged or legged.
Legged or legged.
It depends on where you grow up.
Okay. So the black leg tick. That carries Lyme disease or transmits Lyme disease.
Yeah.
So.
Fun fact, when I moved into my house in Hamilton Mill at this point 20 years ago.
Has it been 20 years?
Had a bunch of brush in the backyard, a bunch of briars. I was out there clearing the briars, doing this, that, and the other. And that night I woke up and I'm like, golly, there's something. What's going on here on my neck? And reach back and pull a deer tick off of my neck. So that's probably,
that is actually,
was like super disgusting.
Yeah.
And that's probably where I kind of developed a little bit of an allergy to red meat. So anyway.
Doesn't it just like totally creep you out? So yeah. I had actually, I guess being prepared for this talk here, but Friday night I went to sleep and I woke up super early on Saturday morning, like 4 a.m., with this nightmare that I was covered in ticks. And like when I closed my eyes, all I saw were ticks everywhere. And then, you know, as most dreams happen, like when I wake up, I can only remember bits and pieces. And so I remember my mom actually had 2 ticks on her back embedded, and there was like a mom tick and a baby tick. And like in my dream, we talked about it. And then I decided to get up and take a shower at 4 a.m. because it was just, it totally grossed me out. But
wow.
So back to the whole pet owner situation. If you're a pet owner and you find a tick on your pet,
you can remove it yourself. Just try to not, you know, grab the body and pull hard. Just be very specific in grabbing the tick's head and mouth parts and try to gently extract them out of
the skin.
The pet skin.
Yeah.
But even if you leave mouth parts in it, it's not going to be a big problem. But everybody talks about leaving part of the tick in, and that's a real big deal. And the tick is going to continue to inject these rickettsial organisms into the body, which probably is true. But it's really not that big a deal.
So I would say you can certainly pull it out yourself. I wouldn't want to.
I've heard about it
somewhere and just have them take it out.
I've heard about people like putting a cigarette butt on the tick to make it let go, quote unquote, let go and pull it out. And then I've also heard of like nail
polish. And alcohol, nail polish. I don't know that any of that actually works.
Yeah. I mean, if your pet is on a monthly flea and tick products such as NexGard, then it will eventually kill the tick and it will let go and it will come off the pet.
So I do have a question though. So let's say that you did find ticks on your pet. Should you be concerned? Should you say like, okay, let me wait, you know, 6 weeks? Like, what is that incubation period for Lyme or any of those other diseases?
I think it warrants a conversation at the very least, if not a visit with your veterinarian. And again, let's talk about what your pet's lifestyle is, what is the sigmoid, which is the age, breed, sex. And at the very least, we're going to have a conversation about what might happen, whether we choose to prescribe doxycycline, which is the antibiotic of choice for most of these diseases, or not, or what to watch for. Even, you know, clinical signs or testing moving forward. So definitely warrants a conversation, if not a visit with your vet.
But nonetheless, we typically, even if your pet is on a heartworm prevention, we do recommend an annual heartworm 40X test, right?
Yes.
SNAP 40X. So that's checking for heartworm in the three tick diseases that we discussed.
Absolutely.
Real quick, we talked about, I don't know what you're looking up here, but real quick, we talked about last week who takes care of the White House pets.
Yep.
Do you remember that conversation?
Yes.
So Dr. Reese, once again, never fails us. She came through and let us know that the U.S. Army Veterinary Corps takes care of the White House animals, and that she had the pleasure of, I guess, having a professor who actually treated Richard Nixon's Irish setter, King Timahoe.
Is that how you pronounce the name? But maybe, yeah.
So, super interesting, the U.S. Army Vet Corps.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely did not know that. So, thank you, Dr. Reese. As always, you come through with your research and development, whatever that means, R&D. So, a couple of stories. We're kind of going long. I felt like, once again, we had nothing to talk about, but we are bordering on 27 minutes into the podcast. From AHA Newsstat. Not AHA Newsstat, from AHA's weekly news roundup, can't speak, American Animal Hospital's weekly news roundup, a couple stories. Cat gives birth to 5 conjoined kittens in Arizona. So I kind of read the story and researched it. It's basically 5 kittens that are attached at their umbilical cords. They're all wound up together like we see.
So were they just too early?
They weren't too early. They just got all mixed up after the birthing process. You've seen this. You've seen 3 or 4
kittens.
They're
not actually conjoined. So they're not sharing skin. They're not sharing organs.
The story reads that they're joined at their skin, the skin of their stomach. Well, it's their umbilical cord that all got wrapped around, and there's this ball of kittens. And so somebody brought them to a rescue group who took them to a veterinarian, and they started separating them. One kitten had to have its leg amputated, right? Because it got entangled in the umbilical cord. So, it's not some freakish, weird.
Well, yeah, because I was thinking, like, gosh, was the
Siamese
cat
twin
like,
situate?
No. Was the cat? Did it get like impregnated in Chernobyl or what?
No, from the visual and the way I read the story, they just got all intertwined in the umbilical cord.
Interesting.
And so we've definitely seen that here before. Next story: April the giraffe.
Do you remember talking about April and her?
No, I don't.
So this was like a big deal. So, gosh, it happens still. There was a live webcam that was going back in like, I don't know, 2000, what does it say? 17.
It says, yeah.
There was a live webcam going and it was like waiting for this giraffe to give birth. And then she ended up giving birth on, it was like maybe, I feel like it was like a month, but maybe it was probably like a week of like live broadcast. And then suddenly she gave birth to this baby giraffe and it was like all over the news, all over social media. But it was really cool because like they had let you kind of learn the giraffe or
kind of
show you the behavior.
Pandas with a very similar thing, bald eagles.
They do it in an eagle's nest. Yeah, for sure. So I guess this is big news because we all kind of got to know that giraffe watching that webcam or that web live series of her giving birth.
She was euthanized at the age of 20, basically due to horrible arthritis. And so I have no idea how long what the lifespan of a giraffe is typically.
Well, I would definitely think captivity versus wild is very, very different. But this giraffe definitely had a ton of fans. So,
okay, third story, and then we're going to have our final and fourth story. The third story is Veterinary College in Virginia, Maryland talks about their community practice and how important it is for fourth year vet students to go into this community practice and have real life situations with people and animals, and how they have got to be trained with hands-on animal experiences. And so my mind goes all over the place with this story.
Why?
Because in the last 10 years, if not longer, a push towards no live animal surgeries for veterinarians. Let's do it all on models.
So not necessarily live, right? It was terminal.
Well, so...
So there's a difference.
It went to no live, and then it went to terminal only, and then there are probably half the vet schools do not even have their students operate on live animals, period. And so, as a pet owner, would you want a veterinarian graduating from vet school with no experience on a live animal? I sure wouldn't if they're going to operate on my animal.
Well, no, definitely not.
And so my mind goes with this story, how important it is during these times for these fourth year students to get their hands on these pets with common maladies and conditions. And my mind goes to telehealth, right? So during COVID, the push is we as human medical doctors or veterinarians, we don't need to get our hands on your pet or our patients. We can diagnose, prognose, do all these things via telemedicine. And some things you can do, but you and I have had this discussion with Andrew from BI multiple times. It is so limited what you can and can't do with telehealth.
Yeah, I do think it's different in people, right? Because they can tell you, oh, it hurts here. It's been hurting for X number of days, or I've got this cough or this congestion or whatever. It's very different in animals, right? Like, we do very much depend on the history from the owner.
Super important.
Giving all of that very important information. But to your point, there is a lot on a physical exam.
Yeah. Had that discussion with Dr. Williams today. We had a case that had a suspected foreign body GI obstruction, and we talked about, you know, nothing confirms there's an obstruction like you palpating the abdomen and feeling that foreign body in the abdomen.
Sure. And then you confirm it, or you rule out suspicions with digital imaging and ultrasound.
Versus it's suspected on radiographs or ultrasound, but you didn't feel it. And so, yeah, I mean, our job as clinicians, whether you're human or veterinary clinician, very, very difficult. You have to put all the puzzle pieces together to try to come up with the answer.
Yeah, for sure.
Last story. American Humane is opening the polls for the 2021 American Humane Hero Dogs, or Dog Awards, rather.
Mm-hmm.
They also have Veterinary Hero Nurse and Hero Veterinarian categories, correct?
Yes.
And so, do you know anybody in the room that has actually won this award or one of those awards?
Do I know anyone?
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So was it 2019?
It was 2019 that I was the winner of the Hero Vet Nurse Award. So I think it's interesting. Like last year, in 2020, I feel bad for those people, you know, that got to participate. I feel like with COVID going on that there was so much other distraction happening. I don't know if they got all the attention, or I would really wonder, like, did the same number of people vote in 2019 as they did in 2020? Are in 2021, are they going to expect a bigger turnout because, you know, of COVID and that kind of thing? I do think they actually did have a ceremony last year in 2020.
Ceremony, yeah,
virtually. Yeah. So good for them, honestly, continuing on with their their efforts here, right? So versus us with our Care Fund, we've halted both our 2020 and our 2021 fundraiser for 5K.
Yeah.
For the Care Fund. So
I actually saw American Humane. I was watching a movie within the last 7 days, some silly movie on Netflix. And at the very bottom, I saw American Humane, you know,
was on set.
On set verifies no animals were harmed or put in danger during this.
Yeah. It's actually super interesting. So I am like, because of this award, I'm so much more aware of what they do. It's not just about, you
rescuing sea turtles. And,
it's not just about that. It's truly all things animal wellness. And so they do have, and I met actually one of the girls who goes on set as a veterinary technician and just ensures that the pets aren't overly stressed and that kind of thing.
It's very cool. So I think you can just go to AmericanHumane.com probably, and you can find the...
Now they're just taking nominations for the dogs and so voting for the dogs, right?
The reason I brought this up, I want you to look at, I'm going to start scrolling. We've got it pulled up on our podcast iMac here. Look at the number of dogs. So there are four across, and we're going to scroll down, and
we're going.
We're halfway down. That's probably 100 animals at least.
Oh, wow.
And there are tons of nominees.
So the good thing I would say about that is, like, obviously, whoever nominated these dogs, there's different categories as well, right? So, like, I don't know if you're looking at one category or multiples.
So I'm looking at all categories, and I will read you the categories. Guide/hearing, law enforcement and detection, military, search and rescue, service, shelter and therapy. So four, so seven categories.
Yeah, so similar.
And they used to have four, did they not?
No, I think there was more than four. Okay. I'm pretty sure there was one in every single one of those categories back in 2019 when I won. So it's just interesting to hear all the stories and how these pets are impacting people's lives. So if they're search and rescue, like, that is a big job. I mean, search and rescue dogs were used like in 9/11. They're used in earthquakes. They're used in a lot of things that, you know, they just don't get the recognition for. So this is a great place to kind of educate people for that. Law enforcement dogs, you know, obviously they're out. We had a law enforcement dog last year this time get shot in the line of duty, remember? Yeah. And there was like a big thing. So like, these dogs are truly impacting the lives of not just their handler or the person directly responsible for them, but truly. And it's just to see the number of nominees is kind of heartwarming to know that there's just so much action with all these pets.
Very cool. American Humane Hero Dog Awards. I would encourage everyone just to kind of check that out.
So on contrary of this, have you seen anything about what is that? Oh, gosh, the blonde European actress lady.
Wow.
She's a little overweight. Yeah. She's a comedian. Oh, my gosh. I don't know her name. She has a dog grooming show. I think you and I should watch a couple episodes of the dog grooming show and then talk about that on the podcast.
Okay, perfect. All right, well, let's wrap up. That has been a very interesting discussion that we had today, I think.
And anyone else who wants to watch that grooming show, like,
you have no idea what the name of it is.
I don't know the name of it. I know it's been all over social media.
Dog grooming.
There's a, yes, she has, maybe she's Australian. I don't know what her name is. But she has an accent. She's overweight.
It's Australia in Europe?
I don't know. No.
It's not.
They're not. But that's what I said. Maybe it's an Australian accent.
Okay.
Anyways, it's all over social media, and people are talking about, like, did they actually watch a dog grooming show, or did they watch, like, a half hour of animal abuse? So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's where you're going with that.
Yeah. Okay. We need to watch it.
Cool.
So check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Make sure to follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.